Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to be back. So today I'll talk to you about my most recent work. The title of which is Modular Berry Connections. So this is based on a short paper I put out with my friends Bartek, Jamie, and Sam right before Christmas. It's 5 pages long, so I encourage you to take a look. There will be a longer one where we explain the details more carefully. So, three words I'll try to explain to you in the most simple possible way what I mean by that and why you should care. So I will skip all introduction, and I will focus on. I will start with explaining what a berry phase and what a berry connection is in a simple setting. So here's the simplest setting that I can come up with. Here's a two-dimensional sphere, and let's define a vector on it. Now, what we're going to do, our task here, is to move this vector around. So the reason why this is not a trivial process is because this vector technically is defined on the tangent space of this point, and the tangent space has a symmetry, an SO2 symmetry, which rotates the vector around. So in order for me to transport this vector at a different point, I need to give you a rule for how to implement that SO2 rotation. More technically, I need to define a map between nearby tangent spaces. So let's pretend that this is an infinitesimally separated point from that point. The point is that I need to define for you a way of identifying, of mapping the bases on this tangent space to the other one. This map is called the connection. So the choice of a connection depends on the physical problem that we are interested in. If the space we're trying to move our vector on is a metric space, then there's a natural choice, the metric compatible connection. And what the metric compatible connection tells us, for example, is that it provides us with a way of moving this, which is the following: follow the geodesic that connects these two points in a way that preserves the angle of a vector with the geodesic. Now you have a rule for how to move this vector, and you can play a game, which you have played before. You can move this vector around a closed loop and bring it back to the same point. By applying this rule of parallel transporting, you can convince yourself that when you bring it back to the original point, the vector, the parallel transported vector, will be related to the original vector by a rotation r, which is an SO2 rotation on the tangent space. The angle by which I rotated the vector is an example of a geometric phase, or a berry phase, as we will see shortly. So this is a trivial example, and let's try to understand it as deeply as possible, because in a way, this captures everything that you need to know about berry phases. So I'll do all the technical stuff here and then transfer everything that we did here to this, to the more interesting situation. So one way of understanding this is by remembering that the sphere is a homogeneous space. So a two-sphere, for example, can be understood as the cosine space, SO3, cosine by SO2. In case you're not thinking about cosine spaces every day, what this means is the following. When we consider the quotient of a group, what we do is that we take the group elements and we group them into equivalence classes. Equivalence classes of elements that are related by the subgroup that we're quotienting by. So when we say that the sphere is this quotient space, the space of equivalence classes, what we mean is the following. Like in the group SO3, any element of SO3 is related to another element by an SO3 transformation. And in the sphere, that means that we can go from any point in the sphere to any other one by rotation. But of course, not every element of SO3 will move points on the sphere. For every point, there's a rotation which fixes that point in question, and therefore it doesn't move us in the, on the sphere, and that is why the points on the sphere are identified with the equivalence classes of this group. So that's what this means. So this group is called the stabilizer group of the point, or the little group of the point. And now we can understand the appearance of this phase as follows. Any path, this closed path that I drew over here, can be understood as the composition of three elements of SO3. Each of these is an SO3 element. What's the property of this path? It's closed, so it brings us back to the same point, which in this language, it brings us back to the same equivalence class, an SO2 equivalence class. This means that this composition of these three group elements will be, in general, an element W, which is not the identity, but some element of the little group of the point. The precise path determines what this element is, and it is precisely the rotation of this vector. So this phenomenon, you can see it with different appearing with different names depending on the physical context. It can be called a Wigner rotation, or a Thomas precession, or a Berry phase. Now, of course, you know that in this particular case, there's this neat group theoretic argument that gives us a Berry phase. More generally, this comes from the fact that the space is curved. So you don't need the space to be homogeneous for that precession to occur. You just need the space to have a non-trivial curvature. So the underlying reason is that the curvature of the space is non-zero. Now, one last comment in this simple example before we move on to the case of interest is that generally the angle of a vector at a point is not a well-defined concept, precisely because of we can always apply diffeomorphism and rotate it. The answer to this is that the Berry phase, however, is a relative phase and not an absolute phase. So we're really talking about the angle that the parallel transported vector forms with respect to the original one. So in a sense, you can think of this object, this Berry phase, as a sort of a memory. It's an object that remembers which path we took and what we saw, what we encountered on our way. So this space over there, I mean, I did everything in the case of a sphere. This space could be an actual physical space, let's say the Earth, and the vector being the velocity of a particle. Or it could be an abstract space, let's say the parameter space of a quantum mechanical system. What does this mean? Well, the example would be the following. Imagine a family of Hamiltonians, which depends on a set of parameters, lambda. Now, there are situations where the parameter space of this family of Hamiltonians could potentially have a geometry like this, out of a sphere or a more general space. What would that mean? Well, at every point in the parameter space here, we define a Hamiltonian. In order for this parameter space to have the geometry of the sphere, one thing, for example, one requirement is that an SO3 transformation would take us from any element of this family to any other. That's the first thing that it needs to be satisfied in order for us to be able to claim that this geometry is this. And the second one would be that for a given Hamiltonian, each Hamiltonian at each point on this parameter space is invariant under the action of SO2. Let's call this W. If these two requirements are satisfied, then we can claim the parameter space to have this geometry. And then the vector that whose phase we're tracking as we move along this loop in parameter space would be a state vector in that case, not an actual physical vector. So it's a general phenomenon.
W is an element of what? So U is an element of SO2.
I'm sorry?
U is now element of SO2.
This is an SO3, and this is an SO2.
Yes.
So the statement is that, yeah, we can move to any Hamiltonian by an action of an SO3 in that case, but every Hamiltonian is stabilized by a given SO2. That's just to illustrate that this is a general concept. It doesn't rely on having an actual geometric space. It could be a parameter space of a physical system. All right, so this is usually the context in which this geometric phase is called the Berry phase. So now that we have clarified this, let's go back to the introduction I skipped earlier. Why am I even mentioning this? Well, imagine now a conformal field theory. And for our purposes, it will be a holographic conformal field theory. So we're working ultimately in the concept of ADS-CFT. To make it concrete, let's assume that we have a two-dimensional conformal field theory on the cylinder and in a state rho, global state rho. Now, every subregion of this conformal field theory will also be described by state, which will be a reduced density matrix. So given a global state rho, we have a collection of density matrices for all subregions of the boundary. I will call it the boundary by virtue of radius CFT. So for every subregion of the boundary, we have a reduced density matrix. These reduced density matrices are useful objects. They help us, for example, study correlations between the region and its complement. One way of capturing these correlations is by computing von Neumann entropies or other quantities like this. They're also useful because having access to the density matrix of, let's say, an interval in this case, this allows us to compute any correlation function within the causal diamond of this region. Any correlation function of operators in that region can be computed without knowledge of the global state. Similarly, in ADS-CFT, these objects are also useful because one thing that we understood recently is that there exists a, let's say that this is the region A that I'm referring to. The von Neumann entropy of this density matrix is equal to the area of the minimal surface anchored on the endpoints of this region, on the borders of this region. And the density matrix can also be used to reconstruct the physics in a wedge, which is everything space-like separated from the boundary and this Ryuta-Kaganagi surface. So this is a powerful object. That's the main point. The question that interests me is the following. All of the elements of this family of density matrices descend from the same global state. That's a very non-trivial statement about a collection of density matrices. If I give you an arbitrary collection of density matrices, you can't find a global state which is consistent with all of them. So this means that these objects have a non-trivial relations between them. And it's these relations that we want to study. From the perspective of ADS-CFT, you can think of this in a geometric way. Since every individual density matrix can be used in order to reconstruct low energy physics in this wedge, you can use different density matrices to construct different patches, but all of these are patches of the same global geometry, and therefore they need to satisfy consistency relations. It is for this question that I will, in order to make progress towards this question, I will propose a Berry set, and I will explain this in detail. The first step will be to move from the space of reduced density matrices to the space of modular Hamiltonians of the regions. The modular Hamiltonians being defined formally as minus the logarithm of the density matrix. There's a number of reasons why I'm making this switch, but they're not important for this talk. So the idea now is the following. Given a family of modular Hamiltonians for a given global state, you can ask the question of what happens when we perform loops in that space of modular Hamiltonians. We can start deforming a region, namely changing the modular Hamiltonian we're considering, around a closed loop in the parameter space, this parameter space being the space of regions now. And the question is there an analog of the Berry connection whose holonomies will compute these Berry phases we found in ordinary quantum mechanical systems in a similar setting. So we're looking for maps between different modular Hamiltonians. You can think of them as maps between the eigenspaces of these different modular Hamiltonians. Another equivalent way which will be useful for us is maps of operators in these subregions. That's because operators, since the modular Hamiltonians are Hermitian operators, operators in the algebra can be expressed as outer products of states, and therefore the transformation of the states is the operators inherit the transformation because of the transformation of the states. That's just another way of looking at it. It's the same object. So this is the general question I want to ask. Is there a connection, a notion of a connection in the space of modular Hamiltonians of a given global state?
Sorry, can you repeat what is your parameter space, the parameters in which you're moving?
So I'm considering the space of all, in this particular case, let's focus on CFT2 just to keep the context fixed throughout this talk. I'm considering the family of all reduced density matrices of connected intervals. So when I'm moving in my parameter space, I'm just varying the region that supplies the modular Hamiltonian.
So in Mach+1D, do you have anything other than the length of that region to vary?
You can vary the location.
But presumably it's invariant under translations, the system.
Well, it's not the same. It's not the same operator. No? It's a different. A modular Hamiltonian is a different operator in the global Hilbert space, right?
Right. Yes.
So it's not. Yeah. There's a symmetry which we will. In the vacuum, there's a symmetry which we will exploit because the place where I'm going to make these connections precise, these ideas precise, will be the vacuum. So from now on, I will restrict to the case of the vacuum to make progress. And the symmetry will be a crucial component in getting results, but. But it's not the crucial feature of the format.
So this modular Hamiltonian, so is it possible to say it's a gapped Hamiltonian?
So generally, these are not gapped, no. All right, so let's make these things precise. And let's restrict to a specific context. I will consider the vacuum. Now, I'll put the full CFT in the vacuum. In that case, there's a number of things that are useful about this. The vacuum preserves the conformal symmetry of the theory, which has two implications. Implication number one is that the modular Hamiltonian of a given interval is a generator of the conformal group. So here's how you should think of the generator. Imagine that this is my subregion A. There's a causal diamond canonically associated to that region. And the modular Hamiltonian is generating a flow, a notion of a geometric time flow, which looks like this. It moves us along this. It preserves the causal diamond of this region. So this is what HA does. Now, clearly, HA commutes with HA. And therefore, this time flow is a symmetry of the state of the subregion. However, you can also show that the modular Hamiltonian has another symmetry, which is translations along these constant modular time slices. So these are slices of constant modular time. And if I define a generator P of A, which generates translations along them, this is also a symmetry. Namely, it commutes with HA. So the symmetry of a given density matrix is an SO1,1 times SO1,1 subgroup of the conformal group. So that's one implication of the fact that we're restricting to the vacuum. Before we go to the second, actually, since we will be talking about ADS-CFT eventually, let me just translate what these things look like in the bulk picture. So I'll draw two pictures. Here's an interval. Here's the RT surface that bounds it. And now this is a look at the ADS side from the side, where this is the RT surface, and this is this defines the wedge, a section of the wedge. So the modular Hamiltonian in the bulk language generates time translations, Rindler time translations along these constantly accelerated paths. This is the action of HA. And the action of P generates translations along the bifurcation surface and this equidistance. So this is what the action of the symmetries, of the same symmetries of the modular Hamiltonian look like in the bulk. So that's implication number one. Implication number two is that we can go from, because of the conformal symmetry of a vacuum, we can go from any modular Hamiltonian of any subregion to any other with an action, with, by the action of a conformal transformation. So HA can go to any HA prime via an element of the SO2, 2 group. So we have a situation like the one we described in the beginning on the sphere. All the elements in our family are related by this transformation. But each of the elements is stabilized by a subgroup of that group. And therefore, the geometry of the parameter space for the modular Hamiltonians of the vacuum looks like this. It's this cosine space.
Is it obvious that this subgroup is a subgroup of?
Yes, you can show it, yes. Mm-hmm.
So how about for the d-dimensional case?
There's an analogous story there. If you go to higher dimensions, you have to ask various questions, like, for example, are you allowing arbitrary deformations of your surface that supplies the modular Hamiltonian, or do you want to consider a subset of cases like that? Both of which are valid questions. I want to avoid all of these technicalities in this one and make progress in this setting. Okay, so what we did here is that we exploited the symmetries in order to argue for the structure of the parameter space of the modular Hamiltonians. But remember, we're looking for a connection in that space. This is what we want. We want a map from one modular Hamiltonian to the other. So what will happen, before I make it even more precise than this, let me give you an argument exactly what will happen. Let me introduce the object whose transformation we're going to try to keep track of. So imagine, for example, a bulk operator defined at some point in the bulk here. So this is a field phi of x. I'm sorry, phi of x, r, and t. There's three coordinates that I need to specify. As I said, this group that preserves the modular Hamiltonian consists of Rindler time translations and Rindler space translations. So what is the implication of this structure of the parameter space? Well, if we start with this region, with that operator defined at some point, we can now define a notion of a parallel transport of that operator as we move the region around. So you can transform to a different region, for example, and then transform to another region, and then go back to the beginning, and you can define a So you define a loop in the parameter space that takes you from one modular Hamiltonian to some others and back to the original one. But when I complete this loop, I will come back to the same element of the family of modular Hamiltonians up to an action of this little group. So this means that while this is being parallel transported to itself, phi will be parallel transported after we close the loop, we'll come back to an operator in the original wedge, phi tilde, but it will be related to the original one via the action of this little group. Namely, we'll come back to an operator that is shifted in x and t.
Sorry, how did you define phi in the first place?
So I chose a local operator in the original wedge, and then I defined the parallel transport of that operator. I haven't told you how to implement the parallel transport yet, but the idea is that the same way that you can define a vector in some space and then use the connection to map that vector, to transport that vector around. Of course, you need a rule for doing this, but granted a rule, you can do it. And that defines for you a vector around the loop. And then when you come back to yourself, you will not come back to the same vector. What I'm trying to illustrate here is that I haven't given you the rule yet. But whatever rule I give you, by the time I parallel transport my operator around that loop in modular Hamiltonian space, when I come back to myself, I will come back generally up to a shift by delta x and delta t, which is the action of this. So this will be the periphases that we're interested in. Of course, now I have to tell you what's the connection that computes them.
Is this different than from like acting with isometries on EDS on the coin, on the operator?
Is this different?
Because I mean, what maps A to A prime to A double prime is conformal transformation.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Those are just isometries in the bar.
Yes, that's right. So so the operator, precisely. So I'm trying to, I will be using the sphere picture just to keep the discussion as clear as possible. So when you take the vector and parallel transport and bring it back to the original point, it comes back to the same point up to an action of the symmetry of the tangent space. So the analogous statement here is that when you take the operator and define this parallel transported thing and you come back to the same region, you come back to the operator in the same region up to an action of the isometry of these Rindler wedges. So SO1, 1, this subgroup is precisely a subset, is precisely the isometries of the wedge I'm starting with, I started from.
Sorry, so my confusion was just this connection that you will end up getting doesn't seem to depend on A at all. It just depends on the transformations from A to A prime, etc.
It depends on the path that I'm taking,
that's
yes.
Right. Yeah, which is just which of the conformal transformations you do, how you elongate the region.
Right, it depends on the precise path, yes.
That's right, but it doesn't depend on the original A.
Well, the original A is a point on this path, so I guess I don't know what the answer to that is.
Right, but like, let's say I pick some this completely other region B and do the same path, like follow the same
if your question,
global transformation.
So, so as you will probably, as you may be probably able to tell already, the connection that I will give you is a connection whose holonomies are invariant under the action of the conformal group. So any loop that can be related to any other by conformal transformation will, of course, give you the same periphase. So, but it's a property of the loop. So before I proceed, I want to make sure that the context is clear. What we're trying to do and what the claim is. We're trying to construct maps from different regions, between different regions. And the probe, of course, the modular Hamiltonian, we demand that the modular Hamiltonians come back to the original modular Hamiltonian. So we're constructing loops in the space of modular Hamiltonians. And the probe of the periphase will be a local operator. And I claim that the periphase will look like this. Now, if we agree on this, let's make one simplification, although we can discuss other aspects of this a little bit later. Instead of taking an arbitrary local operator in these wedges, let's push that operator all the way to the bifurcation surface. So take the limit where R goes to the horizon of the wedge. What happens at that limit is, well, first of all, the R dependence drops out because I select the specific R. R measures my distance from this bifurcation surface. But another thing that happens is because the bifurcation surface is the fixed point of this Rindler time translation, the T dependence drops out too. So this becomes an operator with a dependence on the location on the horizon. The formal statement is that this is a zero mode of the modular Hamiltonian of the region A. I do this for various reasons, one of which is that one of the periphases goes away, and that makes it a little bit simpler. The other one is that objects that commute with a modular Hamiltonian are always associated with operators on the horizon, even in cases where we're away from the symmetric ADS case. So when we're looking for generalizations, it's good to formalize things in a symmetry independent way as much as we can. Anyway, so this is the object now that I will be computing the connection, the Bay transformation of. So the answer now is kind of easy to get. This is a structure that many of us have explored in the past. It is actually a geometric space. It can be understood as a this K space can be understood as a product of two-dimensional De Sitter spaces. You can perform a group theoretic argument to argue that. The idea is that it has a well-defined geometric structure you can write down. So in a sense, this is the Lorentzian analog of the sphere I started from. And having this geometric structure, you can now compute the connection. So probably I should give you one more ingredient here. Or maybe I should leave this for later. Actually, no. I'm undecided. I just don't want to lose you on the details. So, okay, let's leave it at that, and I may come back to this later on. The idea, therefore, is that this space has a well-defined geometric structure we can write down, and using the geometric structure, we can define the connection. And the connection, and then these Berry phases will be precisely Wilson loops of this connection. To understand what this looks like, let's now give you a geometric derivation of the connection instead of me writing down mathematical formulas. Here's what the connection does. Start with a region, A, the corresponding wedge, and an operator at some point on this region. And now let's say that we want to map, we want to move from this region A to the region B. What the connection computed by exploding the geometric structure of this parameter space does is that it maps this operator to the operator here, which is obtained by rotating about the common point. So this is the rule in a particular gauge. But now let's play the game that we played in the beginning. Let's now try to compute the Wilson loop. Let's close a loop in the parameter space and compute what this thing measures. So I will go from A to B, and now we'll go from B to C. To go from B to C, what I'll have to do is now rotate everything about the new common point. But in doing so, I acquired the distance from the common point increased by this little amount over here. So if I keep playing that game, by the time I come back to the original region, I have acquired these little piecewise lengths between the intersection points. And the limit where this family becomes dense, as it should be, this computes the length of a curve that is tangent to this family. So the Berry phase, if I start from an operator phi of x, I go to the parallel transported version, which will again be an operator on the horizon of the region, but shifted by an amount delta x, which is precisely this length. That is a particular case, of course. You won't always be able to find a curve that geometrically captures this Berry phase, but this is an example, an example of computation you can do where this Berry phase has a geometric interpretation. Yeah.
So there's also, I mean, this parallels very much this construction in this paper of the information theoretic meaning of the length of a curve.
Yeah.
Can you, does that give you a meaning for this Berry phase?
So I would like to think of it as the, okay, we can ask whether, yeah. So this way of computing length in the bulk in a similar kind of way connects to an older story, the differential entropy story. What I would like to argue here is that this differential entropy quantity that people introduced kind of ad hoc at the time, I think that it should be understood as the connection in the space of modular Hamiltonians of the state. So restricted to that context, the answer is that I see this as the rigorous formalization of this idea. So I see this as the underlying physical principle that gives rise to this. Although I don't want to say that there's nothing to be learned from this older intuition. So, yeah, but I'll leave this at that. So this is a computation of a simple Wilson loop of this modular Berry connection. As a philosophical aside, I just want to say that we were looking for an object that we were looking to study the relations between different density matrices, the way they're glued together in the global state. That's why we came up with this setting of varying the Hamiltonian of the space, of the modular Hamiltonian, and finding maps. So the fact that this Wilson loop seems to be related to a curve that's marginally outside of all the regions kind of, at least at the philosophical level, seems to align with this initial intuition.
So this phi is a scalar field?
Yeah, in my setting, it's a scalar field, yes.
So
yes.
How about the vector field or other, is it possible to see similar?
Yeah, the more complicated the degrees of freedom you're trying to track are, the more non-trivial the Berry phases will be. I try to reduce the complication of the story as much as possible. But yes, it's definitely a question you can ask for an arbitrary object. It's just that you want to have to work harder.
Sorry.
So this
non-trivial connection that you're getting is just one of these holonomies that goes around one of the cycles in SO22.
Mm-hmm.
Because you translate for a while and you go back to your original region.
Right.
So there's a second compact direction in SO22, right?
Yeah.
What's the meaning of that?
So, okay, over here we kind of perform the path in the subspace of this full group. So, I have more things to say about the interpretation of the connection. Here I want to illustrate a simple computation where the meaning is clear. I see this as my way of explaining to you the computation of the connection here without writing formulas. But now we will talk about the physical meaning of this. So that's a good question. There's various comments to the meaning of this. Just be a little patient. All right, so that's one thing. What else? So, but of course, this is, again, a special case, as Giorgio mentioned. What is the meaning of the connection more generally? Well, for this, we have to go back to the meaning of a Berry connection, in particular to the way one can measure a Berry connection. So how does one measure a Berry connection? Well, let's take the simplest case, the classical geometric phase that we were talking about in the beginning. You can think of the sphere as being the Earth. And you can think of the vector as being, let's say, take a pendulum, and the vector shows the direction at which the pendulum oscillates. And then what happens, the way to measure the Berry phase on the sphere is you just allow the Earth to slowly rotate. The rotation of the Earth is moving the pendulum around the sphere back to the same point. And the idea is that by the time you come back to the original point, your precession, the direction of the precession, has shifted. This is the co-pendulum. So the rotation of the axis of the oscillation is precisely an example of a geometric phase. So what you do is that you take a system and then you just adiabatically move it in the parameter space. That's the moral I want to illustrate. In a quantum mechanical system, what you do is you take a Hamiltonian and you go to your lab and you have you can dial the parameters, and you put it in an eigenstate, let's say, and you slowly change the parameters of your Hamiltonian until you come back to the original Hamiltonian. And by the time you come back, you have been rotated by a phase. So what's the analog problem here? Well, we have to consider a problem with an evolution with an adiabatically changing modular Hamiltonian. What does this look like? Well, remember a picture I drew a little bit earlier. The modular Hamiltonian is generating these trajectories, these constantly accelerating trajectories in ADS. So the modular Hamiltonian of a region is precisely defining these observers that move with constant acceleration. Of course, there's no single trajectory like this because you can define word lengths like this, which, let's say, intersect this t equals 0 slice at any of these points over here. So there's a family of these trajectories. So here's an experiment that would measure, would be sensitive to the Berry phase, which kind of illustrates what the meaning is in the bulk. Consider two observers. They move at first with a constant acceleration with some specific initial separation. So they're like, let's say one of them is over here and the other one is over here, and they start with a with a distance L. So they start down here, and they keep moving with constant accelerations. And at some point, one of them decides to fire the engines of their spaceship, and they start slowly changing their acceleration. Now, if you do it slowly enough, you can always imagine the trajectory of this observer to be generated by the modular Hamiltonian of a different wedge. So you can always start, you know, you move along this world line, and then you jump to a world line generated by a different modular Hamiltonian, another one, and another one. So this defines for you a problem of this observer with a varying acceleration defines for you a problem of a time-dependent modular Hamiltonian evolution. Now, by the time you come back, good. So in order to complete the loop, we need, as we start varying this acceleration, we want to end, after whatever we do, we want to go back to the original modular Hamiltonian of the original region. This means that at the end, the observer that started moving around will have to come back to one of these trajectories, which typically will not be the one that he started from. So at the end, the distance between these two observers will have increased or decreased by an amount which is equal to the Berry phase we computed from the connection in the space of modular Hamiltonians. So that is the interpretation more generally. You compute a connection, and this can be measured by this experiment of two observers that move with varying accelerations. So why is this interesting? The way I'm presenting here, it's an artificial construct. I just had one guy change their acceleration arbitrarily. But one could repurpose this reasoning and say, well, what if the acceleration was actually generated by a long wavelength gravitational wave I shot towards the observers? So this slowly changing acceleration could be understood as the effect of a gravitational wave passing through them. In that case, this will move due to the effect of this gravitational wave. And at the end, their separation will have changed by a certain amount. This seems very similar to the gravitational memory effect that is a phenomenon in gravitational systems. So the Berry phase in this case, which we compute in the CFT by quantum mechanical arguments, corresponds to this DC shift, which is reminiscent of the gravitational memory effect. So there's various questions that I will close with, which I find exciting for the future. Well, one, for example, is how to come up with the tools of talking about the connection between different reduced density matrices in arbitrary states. Here we made heavy use of symmetry. The idea now is that we want to look for a connection in the space of density matrices of a state. That concept should be more generally defined, although perhaps much harder to compute. The idea is how can we formalize this more concretely. The other thing that I have been particularly interested in is the following. I restrict my attention to these operators that live on the horizon, where the time dependence of these operators completely dropped out. But as I mentioned in the beginning, after parallel transporting an operator, it will generally come back to an operator that shifted both in space and in time. Now let's connect this back to the experiment I was illustrating earlier with the accelerated observers. Now you have two accelerated observers that are some distance away, and they start moving with varying accelerations, and they come back to the same wedge. We explained what this delta x is. It's the shift in the relative separation. But what is this delta t? Well, this looks like a resetting of the clocks. It looks like by the time they come back to the same trajectory, to the same wedge, their clocks differ by a certain amount. Now, while I can't prove it to you right now, the hope is that this is related to the gravitational time dilation of the two guys. So it's a difference in the proper time that pass for the two observers. So I want to, I will conclude, and I'm a little bit early, but I guess that's good for you. I will conclude by saying that what I was trying to illustrate today is the following. On one hand, we have a quantum mechanical problem, which is all the reduced density matrices of a state have relations, and we're trying to come up with a way of quantifying them. How do we quantify them? Well, let's try to use inspiration from geometry and think of them as some manifold-like structure. At each point in the parameter space, there's a density matrix, and then there are connections, there are relations between them, the connection being a means of quantifying these relations. That's a quantum mechanical problem that doesn't have to do anything with ADS-CFT. It's an interesting question for quantum systems in general. The second aspect I was trying to illustrate is that in the case where my quantum system is actually a holographic CFT, there's a physical interpretation of what this Betti connection computes, which can be understood as a map of the operators of the regions, of parallel transporting the operators of the regions. And what they measure is quantities that are physically meaningful for observers that move with constant accelerations in the bulk. So these are the two aspects I was trying to connect with you, for you today. And I will stop here and just open it up for questions. And the what?
Gravitational anomaly.
That's definitely a question that I have not considered. So what's your reason for asking?
Well, if I think that if I take a region in space, then I do a loop and come back to the same region.
Well, I definitely can't say anything clever off the top of my head. Some of the things that you just said seem to be related to the problem. Namely, what we're essentially saying is that you can start from a physically. What I've been saying is essentially that you can start from a density matrix, and you can start mapping this to different density matrices. But if you do it in two different ways, let's say, then in general, you will come back to the same density matrix up to a change of the conformal frame in this case, more generally up to a change of basis. This change of basis is essentially what this Betti phase measures. It's in my case, it's a simple change of basis because I'm restricting to change of the conformal frame and only. More generally, it will be an arbitrary change of basis, I presume. In the bulk, the same thing is we start from a region and we start mapping it around, from a patch, and we start transforming it, and by the time we come back to the original region, we come back up to a diffeomorphism. The diffeomorphism being non-trivial on the horizon, and therefore being a non-trivial operation, and this is precisely what this was. This was a diff which relates the original operators to the final ones I obtained after I came back to the original region. Now, is this related to the gravitational anomaly? I can't give you an answer to that, I'm sorry. Yes?
In the paper, you mentioned that there might be some connections between the Berry connection and holographic complexity. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
So, I can certainly not say anything concrete about this. One thing that you could have in mind is, as I just mentioned, this Berry phase can be understood as a change of basis. So the idea is that by performing different loops, you can come back to the same region up to a change of basis. So essentially, it probes how the the basis of different density matrices, how the basis of different density matrices are related to each other. So, so it, in a sense, it goes beyond entanglement, or at least the entanglement entropy that we usually talk about, but it is a probe of the correlations between different density matrices, but perhaps more fine-grained probe of that concept. So one could ask whether this has this probes more detailed structure of the correlations between density matrices than for Neumann entropy, for example, and things like that. So in that sense, it may have implications for complexity, but there's nothing concrete I can say.
Okay, if there are no other questions, then let's thank Navarro again.
Yeah, thanks.